Hello, people, and welcome back to another episode of the Out of Bounds podcast. I am back with the usual co-host, Kojo and Sam. How you doing?
I'm all good, bro. Obviously, you guys can't see me, but yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good.
Yeah, he's from South London. I have good connection over there. And I am also here with a guest as well, Faye. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I should say, you know, Faye is a big deal. She does gold diggers. No, so
and reactionary blues.
And reactionary blues. And come decoms. On. So and you decoms, know, yeah. She's industry. She's industry. But obviously, I've had another good week of sports. I don't know if it's good because Arsenal won, and it's never good when Arsenal winning. But they played Man City yesterday, and after being whooped 12 times in a row, it seems they were able to get a win. So just before, obviously, we have a deep dive into the game, what do you guys think of the game in general? Cody, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, it was a bit of a scrappy game, I can't lie. Until the balance of the game, I'll say probably Arsenal were the better team. I think towards the second part of the first half, I think they grew into the game, started getting better chances. Second half, I thought they kind of dominated. I just saw from the stats, they had more shots on target, they had more touches in the opposition box. So I thought like, the quality of the game wasn't great, but I think Arsenal were deserving to be the winners. And congrats to them, even though it pains to say that. But it was a big-time performance for them, even though lucky goal, massive deflection. But it is what it is nowadays, so yeah.
No, obviously, you said it was a scrappy goal and Arsenal were a better team. But Phil, I'll just come to you. Do you agree that Arsenal were the better team yesterday, or do you think it was a lucky win?
I think it was a lucky win. I don't think they were the better team at all. I feel like the quality was so low. You can see that they were missing Saka as well as, you know, who is it that's injured for them again?
I think Trossard got injured, but Martinelli could just start.
Yeah.
Also, just keep having fake injury reports. They just keep saying the player's unavailable. And all of a sudden, the fourth squad is there.
Yeah, but you could literally see the quality, like, for example, in Chelsea, right, we've said, oh, we need a DM. And you could really see the difference. You look at, they have, you know, they had Rice, they had Partey, and who did City play in DM? They played Bernardo Silva, no? So it was just a bit like, the quality was just so poor.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the quality was so poor.
It was a game I watched, and I felt like this game was missing KDB. Because I know probably KDB would have come up from a screamer of nowhere. And obviously, as you said, they're missing Saka. But I think Man City are also missing their two best midfielders. And you could argue the two best midfielders in the league in Rodri as well. And it was like, it seemed like a game of no control. But it was a game like nobody was doing anything. Kovacic as well, he had a stinker, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Really or truly, he should have been sent off, if we're being honest.
I agree. But
as I said, we talk about poor refereeing decisions. But if the decisions are going to go against Arsenal, Liverpool and stuff, I'm not complaining too much. The attack as well, Haaland, he was just locked up. They won't let him out and things like that. And obviously, by the way, Faye, if you didn't know, Sam is a Man City fan. I know, don't act too shocked. There's not many of them. But I'm going to ask
barely
you, Sam,
any.
Maybe there's even just one. I was speaking to him. But
Sam, there's a lot of us.
So I'll come to you and ask you, where do you think it went wrong for City yesterday?
Are you asking me that, Richard?
Yeah.
Do you know what it is? I just think based on, like you said, was missing KDB, was missing Rodri. I think Pep didn't, for the first time in ages, I don't think Pep mind just going and getting a draw. And you can kind of see that Arsenal, in terms of how they played, they learned from the last two games where they played us. And where they had more possession, but we had the better chances and had the better moments where we beat them 3-1 and we beat them 4-1. And I think having, you know, your midfield duo of, or your midfield consistent of Bernardo Silva, Kovacic and Rico Lewis, there's not a lot of progressive passes there. And that goes on to your following question or you saying Haaland got locked up. I think, yes, people like to run with that narrative that, yeah, Haaland needs to be a better all-round player. But when you're playing in a team that's got so much quality, we don't need our striker to be a Benzema or Harry Kane because we have those players there. We just need him to be in the box to score those goals. Because when we didn't have it, when we didn't have a focal point, everyone was saying, oh, why is Pep playing a false nine? Why have we got players going wide, dropping deep? So this is what happens when you're successful. Everyone just wants to find little nitpicks to kind of...
Can I just say something, Sam? Go on. Mm-hmm. Because it seems like every single big game that you have, every single decisive game that you have,
yes,
Haaland is not a contributor at all. He does nothing. So when he looks bad, he mm-hmm. looks bad. And then that's when horrible. You can see, why is he not doing this? Why is he not doing that? You don't say some of you say he's like the best attacker in the world, but if that's the case, he needs to show us something. This was a big game. He showed us nothing. Do you know what I mean? He did nothing. I think he had zero shots. That's bad as a striker.
I hear that, but anyone that knows ball or has watched Haaland, you already know there's nothing that he adds apart from scoring the goals. And at City, we're happy with that. If it was in the other team where you need him to do more, then mm-hmm. that could be your answer. That, okay, cool. We're saying this guy's meant to be the best player in the world, but he doesn't contribute. But in a team mm-hmm. where you're going to have better attacking players in those positions, where you're going to have, whether it's back in the day, it was Sterling or whoever. So Riyad Mahrez, now you've got Doku, Grealish, De Bruyne, etc. Those guys are going to make opportunities for him. That's going to be easy, where he's going to score tap-ins. And that's what we want, because we've had situations where we haven't scored enough goals, or goals has been an issue where we wasn't able to close out the game against Real Madrid. So I hear it about the big games, but if you know ball, you know that, okay, Haaland's not Mbappe. He's not going to be able to just mm-hmm. make something out of nothing. He needs that service. So if your go-to is to say, oh, Haaland didn't do nothing, well, we know his main bread and butter is Kevin De Bruyne, because he does those progressive passes, get those balls where he can run into the channel or run past a defender and he's open. And if a team is playing tight on him and the balls are sideways, we know he's not going to do nothing. He's not going to do a step over.
Can I ask a follow-up question then?
Go on.
Because you said it earlier about how, obviously, if you've got Kate, you needed Haaland just to be there to score goals. That, and everyone knows that City's main contributor has been KDB over the years. But then don't you think in a situation whereas, in, as I mentioned, before Arthur Haaland, two of your three best players are Rodri and KDB. When you don't have that creativity, don't you think as the main man in your team, we need to offer a bit more? Because although you're not going to look for him to start dribbling through the whole team, simple stuff as in maybe hold-up play to bring others into the game, make him run to stretch the back line and stuff. I feel like Saliba did that. Even though Saliba is not a tough, is not an easy job to do, but you can see what he did with Rob Holberton last season. And a lot of people start saying towards the end of the season that Haaland was improving his overall game. But then all that stuff, we didn't see it this game. So although he didn't have anyone to create for him, I still feel like at least disrupt the defence, and he wasn't able to do that.
I hear what you're saying, but you got to realise the players that Man City play with on a wide out, they're not necessarily inside forwards. If that was at Liverpool, where you got a Salah or you got a Diaz that they invert and they're basically inverted forwards, that would make sense, him holding up and doing that. But if you look at City's team, Doku's not he's an out and out winger. He wants to get to the bar line and cross. You look at Foden's a bit of a mix and match. Like, these type of games is where I expect more of Foden to bring out creativity and show people that he can be that successor to Kevin De Bruyne. Like, if I'm looking for someone to do creativity in our team, I'm looking at Foden. Maybe even a Grealish. If you play a Grealish, I think there's some opportunities there. But I think with the team that we played, I don't think it necessarily... Like, Haaland holding up the ball is not necessarily helping us, because we didn't have a lot of people that are going to run past them anyway.
There's a lot of excuses for Haaland here.
No, it's not excuses, because I never said we lost because Haaland didn't step up. I said, cool, we lost. It wasn't a great game, but we move. It's one game, it's October. I think we can get past that.
That's three losses back to back, no?
Yeah.
It's not three losses back to back.
It's three losses back to back.
Yeah,
two losses back to back in the league.
We beat Leipzig. So how's it three in a row? We beat Leipzig.
But
three losses in the last four games.
That's fine.
It's fine for City.
What? You tried to change the narrative, didn't it? You tried to change the narrative and said, oh, yeah, it's three in a row. But it's cool. I know that's where the Chelsea fans are used to that.
Sam, Haaland, as good as he is, 50 goals a season, whatever, he hasn't scored against Chelsea yet. And I feel like you've had the Grealish, the Foden, the KDB. So there is an issue there with big games. He's not doing enough. Champions League final, you had all of that there. He still wasn't doing anything. So it was like, I don't know. I feel like it'll take some time, but I feel like Pep will get annoyed. Annoyed.
I love the critique that comes from teams, people that support teams that are not doing anything. I love the critique. Chelsea fans, Liverpool fans, everybody wants to talk about them. What are you, man, doing? You're celebrating, the win against City in October. We are critiquing
as a football fan, not Chelsea fans.
I thought we beat you three times a season. One time, I won the Champions League that season. We did Chelsea.
Don't mind them all.
So we're going back to 2019. So we're living in the past.
No, but we did that.
In all fairness, what I will say is that this isn't coming from the point of view from a Chelsea fan, because. Mm-hmm. I think some City fans will tell you this as well. Whereas if you're talking about the best, because this is one of the favorites, him and Messi are two favorites to win the Ballon d'Or. And I said that I believe that he should.
Ballon should never win the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, but I said, let's not do that. Let's not go with that.
I think he should win the Ballon d'Or because he doesn't contribute all phases of the game.
He shouldn't win. Let's not do that.
I agree with you. He should win the Ballon d'Or. That's my point. I'm saying if someone is a Ballon d'Or candidate, I do expect it to be more of a thing that. Sometimes rely on yourself, like to offer more than what you did. Now, as you mentioned before, I understand he's not a Mbappe type of player. He's not going to be Benzema, but I think that kind of performance was just shocking. Like in 1v1 battles against Saliba, just had them every single time. And even from a physical point of view, I used to see some games from. If I was to take another player, even though he's technically better, Diego Costa, from back in the day, even some of the games that he didn't feel like he was doing well in game in terms of goal scoring, you could see he will bully defenses. He'll be able to rattle them, and other teammates were able to feed off that. He gave you absolutely nothing. I think that goes more beyond players creating for you and things like that. And that's where I'm coming from. So you can say that obviously more people need to create.
But we know that's not his stat. We know that's not. But my point is, we know that's not his game. He's not going to create something out of nothing though. So there's no point judging his game.
He needs to be able to do that. What do you mean? When the chips are down and you have nobody to rely on.
No,
he needs to be the guy that you rely on. Those big games, you can you know what? I know for a fact Haaland's scoring. When it was me at Chelsea, I knew for a fact, no matter what, Didier Drogba, he's scoring. No matter what. And every single time he scores.
We're scoring 9 goals a season, 10 goals a season.
When the chips are down and it matters, he's scoring. You can't say that with Haaland.
Richard, for the next 10 weeks, make sure you bring Faye onto this podcast, because you know you got a run of death row games. Let me see when your big players step up. Because I want you here. You know
we ain't got no big players. We've got kids, and I'm fine with that. It's a progress. It's a project.
But Sterling can do everything, so he needs to step up, right? Yeah,
I think Sterling's shit. So
you man love Cole Palmer. He needs to step up, right?
Needed Cole Palmer yesterday.
He needs to stop up. He needs to step up, right?
Look at head loss over one loss.
Caicedo.
You needed Enzo yesterday. Enzo, there's a step up in the Richard, big game.
Those next 8 games Chelsea have got, I need Faye on the podcast every single Monday to hear the rubbish when the players don't step up. I don't hear no nonsense.
Okay, you know what? Before we move on to the next topic, Kojo, you have the verdict, because obviously we've kicked you out of the fan base, so you're a Milan fan now. Do you feel like Haaland needs to offer more, or do you feel like Sam is right in terms of players around him should be? Are you claiming players around him should step up more in the absence of KDB and Rodri?
What am I saying that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they should. The attacking players should step up more and be able to provide the service that Haaland needs for him to be productive. How he moves.
Now, I hear what Sam's saying. I do feel like the players need to step up, like, to give Haaland service, isn't it? But I feel like, coming back to what Faye said, but with Chelsea, when it came to Costa, even though he wasn't the most technically proficient player on the ball, but he imposed himself against defenders. Like, he actually tried. You saw him in the game trying to create something. And yes, his game, Haaland was non-existent. Like, you didn't notice him. Do you know what I'm saying? So I feel like for him to put more of an effort to get on the ball, to kind of give defenders more of a challenge, I think that will kind of be more visible for us and say, you know what, it might not be great on the eye, but he needs to try and do something, innit? With Haaland, it's like he goes missing, if he ain't scoring, he's not doing anything. you know what I mean? Like, you can't really notice in the game, innit? And for a player of his stature and value, you want him to kind of at least have some impact, whether it's maybe winning a header, do you know what I'm saying? Creating an attacking chance, do you know what I'm saying? Just being in the game, imposing yourself, innit? He doesn't have to be the most proficient player, link up with play. Doesn't really need to get assists for a striker. I agree with that, Sam. Like, he doesn't need to be doing a Harry Kane or Jesus, but just be more involved in the game. Like, actually make himself, like, visible, noticeable in the game, innit? And I feel like too many times in big games or in the size of games, you don't really see that Haaland, that we're seeing him scoring against Nottingham Forest or getting a hatch against Newcastle, or, do you know what I mean? Just kind of bullying, like, the teams which are below top 10, innit? So,
I feel like he scored against every single Premier League team against, apart from Chelsea.
Not Chelsea.
Yeah, I get that.
Don't worry.
He's not making it seem like he's a flat track bully.
You don't got a Luton coming up next. He's going to score 5 goals and you're going to be like, ah.
That's not making him look like he's a flat track bully.
That's all he knows. Small teams. That's all he knows.
You're not trying to make him like a flat track bully. He scored against every single Premier League team apart from Chelsea and Liverpool. That's it.
Barely.
So he needs KDB to hold his hands. Fair enough.
But what I would say, though, is that I feel like, for me, when it comes to the best player of the world, I don't think we know as football fans, it's not really based on, like, the most talented footballer, really. Like, because Messi won at bare times, I think we kind of want that to be based on who's the most talented all-round footballer. But it's realistically based on who's the most impactful player on their team. And if you look at 2023, top three, you say Haaland, Messi, Mbappe have been the most influential players on their team, respectfully, innit? So I don't think...
Not really.
No.
I would say so.
I can't put anyone from PSG.
No,
I mean, his World Cup campaign,
we can't just base everything off a 4-week campaign. Like, it's for, okay, you played well for 4 weeks.
Mbappe was good for PSG.
He didn't put mad numbers, but I thought his numbers for PSG last season were kind of standard. So
what happened to him in the Champions League?
Yeah, but PSG was from the Champions
League. What happened to Haaland in the final?
But he won the trophy, though.
Okay, and he was shit in that final.
He was a top goal scorer.
He was shit in that final.
53 goals.
He was shit in that final.
That's irrelevant, though. I've seen Messi be shit or not even play in the final and still win the Ballon d'Or. He didn't play in the World Cup final, but he still won the Ballon d'Or.
Who? Messi?
Messi. Yes.
Yeah, he did.
No, I've seen... Messi played in that final. No. So when Spain... I'm talking about when Spain won the World Cup, was he in the final for Spain against Holland?
Okay.
He still won the Ballon d'Or, right?
Who are you talking about?
No, he's talking about, like, what's it called? Messi has won the Ballon d'Or without playing. Like, so 2010, when Messi won the Ballon d'Or, Argentina won in the World Cup final and stuff like that. And which I agree, I get what you mean in that sense, but then I can't say that for Champions League because I do feel like there were other players that were so poor for PSG before I could look at Mbappe. I think Messi was horrible. And Messi's been horrible.
That's what I'm talking about Messi, though. So we're basing Messi on everything just on a 4-week campaign. So because he won the World Cup. But what did he do for PSG though? Tell me.
In the whole season, he won bare for Argentina. No.
But this is European Ballon d'Or's about what you do in Europe though.
Yeah, no. But what's Sam's contention? I don't get. Is it Mbappe or Messi? I don't really get.
He's saying that
Haaland needs to win it because he done the treble. He's shit, bruv. He's not scoring it when it matters. let him get 50 goals. I don't even give a flying X.
Oh, okay.
Shit.
So Ballon d'Or is just a popularity contest now. I get it. It's always been that. Anyway,
yeah,
so
you need to have popularity. You need to tell it when it matters. You can get 50 goals, but when the chips are down, you needed Rodri to score that wonder goal. But when it's your striker that you pay 50 million for, that you guys are doing side contract deals and paying his agent 50 million and this and this and that, you want that from that guy.
So why can't Rodri win the Ballon d'Or? Because Rodri's had a better season than when Modric won it. So why can't Rodri win the Ballon d'Or?
Sorry, that's not how it works, yeah?
Hey, it doesn't work. I'm confused.
Maybe Rodri can win it. He could be in the top five. Deserves. Fair enough.
Expect him to do it with a City team. With a City team. What Modric did in 2018 with Croatia, bro. That's more of a great
But why are we always... Why do we pick and choose when we want to use what's based on a country? Because Ronaldo's never won a World Cup or done anything in a World Cup, but he still won it in those seasons. So why do we keep changing the narrative? I don't get it. One minute
because
you do this in World Cup.
Fantastic. Haaland scoring against Farmers and that.
You got to be consistent.
Against Real Madrid.
I think that's disrespectful there, though. I don't think he's currently a smart. he's not performing to standard in the most size games. I agree with you on that, Pei. But my point was basically, come back to Sam, yeah. I agree. I do think Haaland is deserving to be a Ballon d'Or nominee, innit? Do you know what I'm saying? Because if we're looking at it, he has been one of the most impactful players for City alongside Rodri and De Bruyne. So I'm not kind of... contesting that Haaland is not deserving to be Ballon d'Or nominee. But obviously, I see where Faye and Richard have their versions on Haaland's credibility.
So obviously, just in that game as well, because I think although we can come in and say Haaland played crap, which he did, I do feel like on the other side, somebody did have to stop him. And a lot of the person that got applauded from that game was Saliba. And a lot of people are then saying the argument out there, or people are saying definitely Saliba is now the best centre back in the league. Do you guys agree with that?
I'll just take it now. On merit, yeah, I think you can't argue that he's probably the best centre back right now on merit. Like, on form, I think he's been sensational. He hasn't really put a foot wrong. I thought, yes, performance to face one of the best strikers in the world, arguably, Erling Haaland, to kind of make him unnoticeable and just kind of show that confidence and maturity that I'm that guy, that I am the rock in the Arsenal's defence and in Arsenal's wall. And I feel like even last season now, like, he had a great kind of standout season for Arsenal. And I feel like he's kind of like shown the doubt that, you know what, the hype that I had like 2-3 seasons ago when I was on loan at Saint Etienne and Marseille, it was deserved. So I'm very happy to like kind of say that, you know, Saliba for me is one of the best centre backs in the world at this current moment. But I think right now on form, he's definitely the best centre back in the Premier League, and for me, easily a top 5 centre back in the league. Like, if it's talking about overall ability as a central defender.
Sam,
look, Saliba's there in it, but I'm not reactionary like Arsenal fans and people, because you'll have 2 bad games and then people change their mind. So he's in the top 5, but I'm not going to say he's necessarily the best, because that always fluctuates. Diaz will go on a run and then they'll say it's Diaz. And then Garvidal might have 5 or 10 good games and people will change it. So I think he's one of the top 3 best defenders in the league, but I'm not necessarily going to say he's the best.
No, but when you say so far this season, in 8 games, that Saliba has been the most consistent. Because Diaz has had a bit of performance where he hasn't really kind of been last season.
I'm not going to base someone best in the league off 8 games, though.
No, I'm saying, but right now, like, on merit, though, right now, like, we're not saying definitively the best in the Premier League.
No, I think when you talk about a small sample size, you have to give people have got credit in the bank that you still have to say, you know, yeah, maybe over a period, 8 games, XYZ, but then you can't just come and say, oh, your sleeve is the best because of 8 games. Like, that's a very small sample size.
No, but I'm not gonna lie, even last season, he showed that he's top. So, with what you're saying, who would you say is better than him?
Did Saliba play against Lens?
I can't remember.
I'm just asking, did he play against Lens?
I think he did. Let me check quickly.
Okay, then. Okay, cool.
No, but I kind of agree with what Sam is saying, because, and that's why I'm still going to stick with Ruben Dias to be the best centre-back in the league, because I do feel like, as you mentioned, I think that credit in the bank is something for real in football. And even if Saliba might be performing better than him this season, I don't think Ruben Dias is bad enough for... in fact, he hasn't even been bad at all. So I don't think his performances have dropped to the point that you can say Saliba has overtaken him. And then I also think Van Dijk as well has come. He's been quite strong.
No, he's better than Van Dijk.
I think Saliba has been better than Van Dijk this season. No, and I agree. But what I'm saying is that I feel like especially if Diaz is a centre back that has won the Premier League every single season he's been in the in the league, he's also then gone to do the treble. He's won multiple domestic cups. I don't think, and then if he's still going to perform at a high level this season, which I still feel like he's performing quite well, he just might not be the best, but if he's still performing quite well with everything he's achieved, I still feel like
I feel like
he's still able to be the best player in the league.
I feel like you can say that, for example, if Saliba was in that team, it'll be the same thing. I don't know. I just feel like you can't use the fact that they've won this many trophies and whatnot, because obviously, you know, it's a team sport. And for example, Arsenal, they bottled that. That's not up to Saliba. I feel like I don't think he's the best, but I definitely think he's top 2.
So who's the other person you say is the best?
Fofana. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so all of the
people. I say top two.
Fofana.
By the shield. By the shield.
You said Gvardio. Who the hell's Gvardio?
No. I said people change. I said, you can't say it because based on 8 games, I said Gvardio might have a good 8-game run. And people say, oh, he's the best centre back. Then they'll change.
Think of any other defenders to have a good 8-game run.
Yeah, I said
it's not just 8 games though. It's last season he was very very good last season.
Yeah. So that's my point. Yeah. So if you're talking about last season, we took credit in the bank, then it's Diaz. You just answered my point.
No.
Yeah, I said top two.
On merit right now, though, on form right now. I'm not talking about overall who's the better defender, like throughout their careers. I'm talking about now this season.
But Richard just said the same thing. City's defense hasn't been bad, and Diaz hasn't been in bad form. So
I'm just saying Saliba's been for me the most consistent defender this season. I'm not saying Diaz has not done his thing. I personally think for me, overall, I'll see Diaz number one. Overall, him number one. Number two, I put Stones. And number three, I put Saliba. That's my category. But right now, for me, Saliba right now.
Why Stones?
So in another 8 games, someone else goes on the run. We change it again. We'll change.
But it's not just 8 games, though.
No, but
Saliba's doing this longer than 8 games.
Wait,
that's what you're saying. No. You're doing the agenda. You're doing 8 games. It's not just eight games. It's last season.
But Kojo was talking about at this moment based on form. He's talking about the 8 games, right?
This season, exactly. 8 games in.
This season, 8 game. The eight game sample size. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, he's way better. You're misconstruing my arguments now.
Yeah, he's doing it for agenda.
No, I'm not even misconstruing it. I'm not asking a question. So my point is, if another defender performs well in the next 8 games, are we going to change this narrative and say that person's the best defender in the league? That's what I'm trying to ask.
If it's someone like maybe Harry Maguire, we're not going to say he's the best defender in the league.
I don't know. You might tell me that. I don't know.
No, I don't know. Keep it real. I don't know. What I'm saying.
You might tell me that.
Eight games in. Do you know what I'm saying? It has to be consistent.
Wait, Sam.
Yo.
Quick, have you got Saliba in your top three centre-backs in the league?
Yeah, I told you that. I said top three. He's in the top three, top five. So
top three, top five?
Yeah.
So who's your top two?
Pardon?
Who's your top two, Diaz and who?
I'm not trying to big up no Arsenal players because I know how these Arsenal fans are. So just leave it as that.
Come on. Who's in your top two?
Okay, he's in my top two, but he's not one. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, wait. So if he's in your top two, what is then? Why do you keep mentioning 8 games? Because I know he didn't come into your top two off 8 games.
I say that because you know Arsenal fans. Yeah, Arsenal fans, they have a little bit of they have one win, whatever. They start telling you everything. Saka's this, that. He's the best. Martinelli's the best. Yes. What's it called? Saliba's the Mbappe of centre-backs. I ain't got time to hear that. Because when they lose, they start crying, making excuses.
Question.
Mbappe is the Saliba of wingers. That's what they're saying now.
Yo.
Who's in the league? Yeah. Who's better than Saka in his position?
No, I'm not saying that's not the case. But I'm saying I don't need to prop up these Arsenal fans so they can just be waffling. That's my whole point.
Okay.
But I think Salah's better than him.
In his position. I can't lie. You should have full support for Saka. I can't lie. Really. You should have full support for Saka.
What you say?
You have full support for Saka. You should be like...
I do. He's my Niger boy. You're my brethren. That's my guy.
He let the country down. I still have not.
Don't do that, Richard.
Let his country down, man.
Yep. Oh, I still remember when Donnarumma saved that. That's what I keep saying. I was scared to take the train the next day. I thought a white man was going to push me because of what Saka did. So, obviously... Going forward, just the last part of football, do you think this win should reignite Arsenal back into the title charge? Because I remember there was a lot of talk coming into the season and everyone's thinking the transfer strategy, they weren't really impressed with it. I mean, especially coming to the sign of Havertz, they felt like they needed a new striker. And I felt like Arsenal wasn't really playing their best this year. But then going to beat City after City whooped them 12 times in a row in the league, I mean, surely must put them back into title contention or challenges. Do you feel like that win has done that for them, or do you still have question marks over Arsenal going forward?
I mean, I always thought Arsenal were going to be in the top three this season. Whether they'll be much closer to City than they were last year, that was a question mark. But they're undefeated this season. I think prior to the game yesterday, I thought they were quite good. Obviously, not playing the most spectacular football as we saw last season, but they were getting results, and that's what matters. I thought yesterday, it wasn't a great performance from them, but they got the win. They broke that kind of hoodoo, like you said, a 12-winning game streak loss to City and whatnot. And obviously, it's going to give them a lot of confidence, you know what I'm saying, and a huge boost of morale, isn't it? Look, with Arsenal, yeah, I still feel that for me, they'll be competitive. Like I feel like they'll probably be around 8 points to City, maybe, if they don't get any more injuries. But I don't think they're going to win the league. Yeah, I think City are still number one. I think they're still the definitive favourites. I still think Arsenal's biggest worries are the striker position, because, again, like, Nketiah was trash, you know, yesterday. Jesus, for me, I think he was all right, but, again, he's not going to get you the 25 to 30 goals that they need, innit? So, especially when you're going against Haaland and whatnot, I feel like that's going to be the biggest downfall for them kind of being champions, innit? So, and I just hope they don't do it. I hate Arsenal, man. Like, I really do hate Arsenal. I just don't want to see any sort of glory. They just chat bare. And, yeah, it's just, yeah, I can't see it happen. But just kind of keep on the real thing. I feel like they'll be competitive. I think they're definitely better than United. Better than Chelsea. Liverpool, I'm impressed with Liverpool this season, but I don't know if Liverpool, for me, are gonna be consistent coming, like, when we get to the second half of the season, because I have a feeling that Liverpool are going to get a flurry of injuries and whatnot. So we'll see how they handle that if that happens. But I think Arsenal are definitely better than Tottenham as well overall. So realistically, they should be in the top two, but I don't know if they're going to be as good as they were last season and actually kind of get over the hurdle and actually being champions. But they should be somewhat competitive.
I disagree. I actually do feel like they're going to win it this year.
Really?
City don't, God forbid. City don't look as competitive. Liverpool don't look good as well. Obviously, Tottenham's Tottenham. I'll be very surprised if Tottenham even end up first.
Are still coming for them.
But I really do feel like Arsenal, they're going to do it this year. They were so close last season, and obviously they bottled it. But now they've got different things. Like, they've got that partnership, or, you know, well, not partnership. They've got the midfield three with Partey, if he stays fit, obviously. Declan Rice and Odegaard, that's been a real help. I don't know, maybe there's something needs to happen to Kai Havertz, but he can, if he gets his mind right and everything and whatnot, he can also get 10 goals. They have Martinelli, they have Saka as well, Trossard's here now, Jesus as well, but, like, obviously he doesn't get all the goals, but they spread it out enough. They spread it enough where it's not as bad that Jesus doesn't get the goals, because they have a Trossard that can. They have an Odegaard that can. They have a Martinelli. They have Saka. Do you know what I mean? I actually do think they can do it, you know. I actually do. God forbid. But I really do think they can do it.
Well, we need to pray hard that it doesn't happen,
I'm so fasting for 40 days and 40 nights to make sure it doesn't happen. Because if they do, I've got nothing left.
Yeah,
I still have the Champions League thing. I'm running that to my last breath, but yeah.
But then it's after they win the Premier League, it's only a certain amount of time until they win that Champions League. Like, it will come. That's what you're saying. It will come. They would have broken that thing. They would have had all this. They've won the Premier League. Now they're gonna add additions. Maybe they get, God forbid, they get Tony in January. They get this person. They get this. Do you know what I mean? They'll have that.
Yeah.
But on a hypothetical, though, if they do that, though, win the league, win the Champions League, you know, like, obviously, as a part-time Chelsea fan, you know that kind of will discredit Chelsea being a bigger club than Arsenal, because they've now achieved what they've been missing for so long, that Champions
League. Well, we've got
two. I don't care about that argument.
We have more Premier League trophies than them.
I think they're that, we're the biggest club in London by far, isn't it? Even though they're Chelsea, not. And I don't, but they can have that case, like, I can give up to them, so you know what?
No, because we have two. We've won everything. Even if they were to win the Champions League, they haven't won every single trophy. We have, so.
No, I agree with you, but I can hear Arsenal fans getting that point. And, you know, when they talk, it's going to be like a whole,
They won't win the Champions League. I'd be surprised if they get to the quarterfinals this season.
No, I agree. All right. We'll see what happens, obviously. I think we're going into the international break now, if I'm correct. So
Yeah.
We're going to see what happens on the other side when Chelsea do take on Arsenal, which will be a game for bragging rights because...
Well, if they win, I'm definitely coming at Chelsea now, I'll be real.
We're not competing for anything. I would say yes, you hear me?
Yeah, anything. Yeah.
All right, just moving on, obviously, Formula One... It was a sad week. I don't know if it was a sad week or not, because really and truly, I really accepted my faith like weeks ago that Verstappen was obviously going to win his three or second, whether we want to look at it, title of his career. But before we get to Verstappen, I think probably some able to speak more on this. You can speak more on it as well. Do you think Piastri is the best rookie that to been in Formula One since Hamilton? I know a lot of people still talk about Verstappen's rookie season and Charles Leclerc's rookie season, but then I think as a newer Formula One fan, I think what Piastri has been able to do, I mean, he won the sprint race, he's now had two podiums in his career, I think back to back. You guys tell me, is he the best rookie or is there someone else that's better?
That's a tough one, because I hear what you're saying, but you got to look at like different generations and what they had to deal with in terms of the setup of the car and what they dealt with. And I think putting him on that pedestal is very high, because there's been some good rookies that have achieved stuff, maybe not as many podiums or whatnot, but they've just, you've seen their talent from the get-go and you know the expectations. And I don't want to downplay what he's done, and I think it's difficult to say that. Like, just I think the best thing to do is to say he's had a great season. In terms of, you look at him in that McLaren, he's probably the number two driver. We know Lando is their baby, he's number one. But I think it's difficult to kind of say whether he has had that best rookie season since Hamilton, because there has been good rookies that have had good seasons and you've seen the talent. But I will keep it open ended and just say I don't know. He just had a good season. I don't want to kind of put him on a higher pedestal or diminish what he's achieved so far.
Faye, what about you?
I feel like he's done really, really, really well. But I wouldn't say he's had a better rookie season than Verstappen. Like, when Verstappen came about, from what I can remember, he was like really, really hyped up. Like, they were obviously like pegging him to be, you know, eventually the number one driver and everything. And he was the guy for Red Bull, even though Daniel Ricciardo was there. But yeah, it's only been like a few races. I can't say that he's been the best, man. No, not the best rookie since Hamilton. I don't agree with that.
Do you think he has, further down the line in his career, he will overtake Norris as the number one driver at McLaren? No.
That's a straight out no.
Wait, has he won a race? Has he won a race this season?
Lando?
No, Piastri.
No. He won the sprint race, but it's not really a Grand Prix. He won a race, but
I'm not gonna lie, that's more than Lando. So
yeah, but it's different context though, because people care about what's going on a Sunday. Like, if you're in contention to be on that number one podium on a Sunday, it's better than winning any sprint race or whatever.
What I would say is, where I disagree now is that things have changed. So the fact that the sprint was what made Verstappen win anyway, it just shows that the sprint is important now. And he was on the podium or whatever. Do you know what I mean? I feel like he's done more than Lando. Lando's been here. He's been the, oh, it's Lando Norris. Lando Norris, cheeky, chappy guy. Oh, he's gonna get his win. He hasn't won nothing yet. Yeah, he bottled it last season, and he's been bottling it this season as well.
And I think what I would say
you
is
don't
that...
like Lando, I can tell already.
I don't like Lando, no.
I can tell already.
Lando Norris, yeah.
But when she said he bottled it, from when she said he bottled it, I said, yeah, she don't like him.
What did Lando like do him. To you?
I don't know. I feel like at first I liked him because, yeah, he was a little cheeky, whatever. But then I was looking at him and I was like, first of all, what's your race? Okay. What is it like? That's what I don't know. Like, he's playing defense, he's ambiguous, yeah.
Racially ambiguous.
He's racially ambiguous. And then I feel like he's been, you know, he's been proper buddy buddy with Verstappen. I don't like that. I feel like you should have morals. So I don't like that. And people are pegging him. Oh, he's the next one. He's the next one. No, he's not. I don't think he's better than Piastri.
I think he's I think you put him in an elite Mercedes, yeah, or an elite Ferrari. He's giving Max Verstappen fits because he's doing stuff that Max will do though. Like Lando likes to take risks. He's all about speed. And he grew up watching Hamilton. He's been racing against all these young guys, Leclerc, Verstappen, Russell for time, and he just got that dog in him. I think you put him in a good car, he's there to challenge because we've seen what he's done in the McLaren. That's not that great.
So with this McLaren car, that's basically quite fast, right?
Mm-hmm.
You put Lewis in that, he's winning. Even yesterday, it was Lewis's thing to win yesterday. You put him in that, he's winning that.
Yeah,
this guy's Lando hasn't got that. He hasn't got that. He wouldn't. I'm telling you right now. Remember this. He will never win a world title. He will never win it. I'm telling you, he will never win a world title.
Lando is like Verstappen. He's got his team on ropes because they know Lando can go to any team that he wants. And at some point, a seat's gonna open up at Mercedes. A seat's gonna open up at Ferrari, and they're gonna catch Lando's eye, and he's gonna be like, you know what? I've been here. I've been loyal to McLaren for how many years? We haven't won nothing. Let me go to one of the big boys and get a championship there. I think he's gonna win.
He's not good. I promise you. Like you said about Verstappen and Lewis. One thing that they have, right, that the others, a lot of them don't have, right? They're a C word. Lando's not that, and he hasn't got that. All the world champions that you could think of, all those champions, yeah, that you could think of. They're a C word, yeah. Lando hasn't got that. He hasn't got that.
He's not gonna win it. He drove.
That's why Charles.
I love Carlos Sainz. He drove Carlos Sainz out of that team. He drove Ricardo out of that team. Like he has got that. Like he might come with that little puppy dog face, but under the radar, he's pulling the shots.
How
many times have you heard on the radio where he always tries, basically tells Piastri to get out of the way because he's quicker? And even when I think he's spoiled. There's been a number of races that I feel like, and obviously I think because Piastri is his rookie season, he probably obliges as well, which Piastri has shown to be a really good team player. But I do think Lando has been quicker just overall. And even I remember watching Drive to Survive one time where they asked him when Daniel Ricciardo was having a tough time and they asked him about it and he just basically said, paraphrasing, like basically that's what the business is, adios, new person in kind of thing, innit? The only downside I will say I have about Lando Norris, and I'm a big fan of him, is Formula One is always about, especially when it comes to winning world titles, who can perform under highest pressure. And I think he's had two real opportunities in career to win a race, which I think a lot of people go back to Russia 2020, I believe. And then also yesterday as well. And I think yesterday he kind of fucked up twice and qualified.
And Silverstone, don't forget that. Silverstone as well.
Oh, yeah, where he lost. Did he win?
Yeah, but that's because it's his fault. He went onto the tyres at the wrong time. And then Lewis made the right choice. And then Lewis won.
He should have that.
Silverstone should have won.
Why didn't he win?
Inexperience. He made the decision at the wrong time. Lewis just waited. He ain't smart.
He ain't smart. Just like George will never win a world championship. This one will never win it.
With George, I don't think George is winning one. You're right. I agree with that.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so speaking on George then, I'm going to say this. First of all, I'm just going to ask you, who was at fault for that crash yesterday? I know Hamilton came out and said that obviously it was 100% his fault and stuff like that, which I get where he was coming from. The only reason I started having doubts was because when they came out to say they had a discussion about this, to basically saying Hamilton will be quicker off the line, blah, blah, blah. He's more likely to overtake you on turn one. And I started wondering that if you already know your teammate is going to overtake you, instead of trying to overtake Max, why are you more defending Lewis, if that makes sense? Even though Lewis could have left more space. Second?
So I saw somebody on Twitter say, I'm deep in it. If there was a discussion about Lewis going ahead because he's on sauce, so he can tap Verstappen, right? Why was George trying to defend against Lewis? Because he's been doing that.
Yeah.
He's been doing that for races for now. It's like he's forgetting that he's driver number two. He's driver number two. I don't know why he feels like he's driver number one. Even at Lewis's old age, he's still number. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's still to watch it.
It's because he beat his ego's too mad. So because he beat him last year, he thinks, oh, I'm the only. It's only Jenson Button and is it Nico? Yeah, Jenson Button and Nico that's beat Lewis Hamilton. So he thinks, oh, I beat him last year. I've got a privilege. I should be number one. And I saw something on Twitter time ago. It was like, it's a spoilt kid privilege now, isn't it? These young guys now, there's no more respect in it. They just think, oh, I had more points than last year. Even though you didn't do anything major, but now I should have some validation in that team. But you got to realize that Lewis is the OG. He's the GOAT. Like, you can't really chat to him. And we've seen what Lewis has been doing in his car. And he's been outperforming George, to be honest. And there's been situations where George is, like you said, Faye, where George knows that I can't do nothing in this race or I'm not competitive, but I'm holding back Lewis. But if you're a real team player, you're like, okay, cool, Lewis, do your thing, innit? It is what it is.
They need to, they need to remind him, you're number two,
That's what's going to come to you.
Like, you're number two.
Well, that's what's going to come to you, because you said to yourself that, you said George Russell's number two, but the thing is that I don't think it's being said or he knows that he's number two, because they treat their drivers equally the same. You hear them on the radio.
Look how they treated Bottas. Like, he should know. I'm sorry. There's no way in his mind that he could think that he's number one and the seven or eight, whatever, world title champion is number two.
But if you hear a lot of, like, George Russell's interviews, he talks about trying to become world champion. So I think
he's not
going to
do that when Lewis is there. He's not.
No, but that's the thing. Because Mercedes are trying their hardest to make sure Lewis gets another chance to win a title. So when he didn't get a winning cut, I don't think Russell is... Because Russell's not Bottas. I think Bottas did a fantastic job for Mercedes, but I think Bottas realised that he's nowhere near Hamilton in terms of pace, talent, whatever you want to call it. I think Russell, especially when Russell looks around the league, because... I said league around the paddock. He said it himself. Like, obviously, people like to talk about how his teammates beat him, blah, blah. But when you're going up against the greats of all time, the measuring stick is different. So, if it's a situation where McLaren becomes good, so McLaren's challenging for world titles, or Norris is challenging, Verstappen, who's probably still around his age, is challenging, he's not just going to sit back and watch Hamilton go and challenge and be like, I'm going to be this team player. He's going to want part of the as well. So, unless he's specifically told that you're number two, which in that case, he probably would have just did at Williams anyways. He wouldn't have the chance to win a world title. I think we're just going to see more of this stuff happening between
them. He needs to know his place, because I'm not going to lie, it's jarring. There's twice, right? That I can't remember what race it was where he was Singapore. Holding up Lewis and he crashed, right? Lewis Singapore, 100% could have won that race. Yesterday, Lewis 100% could have won that race. And this is twice now where he's cost him. Don't get me wrong, Lewis, you should have seen what was going on in it, because the crash was really his fault. Cool. But it was like, there's team instructions that you're not following it. So it's like, you're not being a team player at all.
But then do you think his performance is Lewis as well? Because one thing I will criticize him for, and I think Lewis has come in to say, is that his qualifying has been really, really bad this year. For his standards anyways. And as much as we're going to say, obviously, he cost Hamilton the win in Singapore, which I agree as well. If he qualified better, he wouldn't have been in that situation. Do you feel like there has to be then some kind of criticism Lewis as well for not qualifying better, so he doesn't have to be in those situations?
No, but you shouldn't expect your teammate to fuck it up, though.
Do you know, I don't say that, because Lewis has been complaining about the setup of the car and certain things that they've done for a long while. And I just see that now, where the stage that Lewis is at and the car that Mercedes given him, it's like he's not too fussed about qualifying, because he knows he's got this talent where, remember, race pace and qualifying pace is completely different. So for him, he's like, if I can get into, you know, Q3 and I can finish within the top five or six, I can make my way through the pack. And I just think, just going back to what you guys were saying about number one and whatnot, I think we spoke about this last time on the pod with Abbas, where because Mercedes are not fighting for nothing, there's no need to say there's a definitive number one or two. Next season, if they have a very competitive car and we see after 8 races or 10 races, Lewis is dominating, maybe he's won 6 out of the 10, then they're going to start saying, George, Lewis is faster than you. Like, that, you already know what that means. Okay.
But they've shown that, though. This season, I think George has beaten Lewis or finished ahead of Lewis maybe like 3 times or something this season, 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, we know that Lewis is the number one. There's no way Lewis is ever going to be number two.
Of course.
There's no way. So,
but Toto's not saying anything here because he knows right about now, Lewis wants to be fine for championship. So it's like, we're not saying anyone here is number one or number two because Mercedes is not fighting for no championship at the moment. But if they were fighting for a championship, they'll definitely side with Lewis because he's got more experience. And we've seen George Russell in crunch time where he's made mistakes. So they would most likely favour Lewis. But at this present time, when everyone knew Max was going to win. Like, Max could finish outside of the top five for the next four races and he's still going to win regardless anyway. So, like, or he probably could even finish and get no points. He's still going to win. So it's like, what are we really fighting for? It's next season where we can see, okay, if there's a trajectory of Lewis performing, then we could be like, okay, cool. He's the number one. George, you're here to support Lewis and back off the Red Bulls, Ferraris, etc. Yeah. And get your points as well.
I mean,
Richard.
Yeah, I thought that was me, Faye.
He's frozen. I don't know, man. I just feel like it's really pissing me off, though, man. It's really his ego is too much.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And for me, ever since Mercedes' performance has kind of dipped, I love F1, but I've been in and out of it because I think Formula One at this present time is only good when there's competition and everybody wants to see the best racing the best. So if you're able to see Max in his best Red Bull and Lewis in his best Red Bull, that's Hollywood. That's prime time viewing, isn't it? But right about now, I don't even need to tune in. I could be like, oh, Faye, who won? Oh, yeah, Max. I already know Verstappen won. Like, that's how boring it is, where I don't need to watch it. I could ask you, oh, the race went ahead. Max won, right? Yeah, he won. It's like, it's crazy.
It's really boring now. Like, you just know, especially towards the start of the season, Max can finish last in qualifying and he's going to finish first. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It doesn't matter. It's gotten boring, man. Yeah, I didn't really watch. I watched the as soon as Lewis came out, I turned off. I'm watching it.
Do you know what? Like, I wasn't even in. I was out, so I was watching my phone, innit, and just checking it. Yeah. Then I saw Richard posted that Hamilton's out. I was like, okay, cool. I don't even care what happens now. Max is probably gonna win.
Yeah.
I don't know where Perez is gonna come and whatnot. So, I didn't really pay attention. But Richard said he got kicked out, so I don't know if we're gonna continue the pod or he wants to continue it. But it was good meeting you, though, Faye.
I need to.
Good to know what you're doing. So you said you're on Gold Diggers podcast. What else?
Reactionary Blues.
Okay, cool.
Chelsea podcast.
I'll definitely go and follow that. Thank you. Doing what you're doing. Love the sisters succeeding in this sports media.
Yes.
Guys, that's it now. I'm the host at the moment. Richard's gone, so I'm gonna take over for now. But always like, share, subscribe, all that good stuff. You can see the social at the bottom at Out of Bounds Podcast. Appreciate Faye Kojo for jumping on, and you'll see us next week. Take care, guys.